Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This month we're doing grab bags, so James picked the movie Hard Candy that our former co-host Jeff Michaels selected for him, and we bring you movie news. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. So I'll read the description of Hard Candy because it's pretty much the entire movie plot and, well, it's pretty much everything, honestly. A teenage girl raids a man's home, suspecting he is a pedophile, in order to expose him. It's Juno really pissed off.
It's Juno in as much as it's Ellen Page, but it is not Juno in as much as everything else.
Like I said, it's a pissed off Juno.
This is the epitome of just a high concept movie. I mean, just really easily communicable idea that's you can tell a story off of without any explanation. Like you said, that's the whole movie, but that's kind of the whole idea.
And it's the cleanest torture porn I've ever seen. There's no blood in this movie, pretty much.
You know, I gotta say, this one from the one that we just watched last week to the other week to this one, I think this was a very good selection by Jeff for me. Because this is kind of
for sure,
yes,
kind of right up my alley, and I gotta give major props to the
David
director.
Slade.
I just had thank you, David Slade, because I mean his cast was five. There were five people in this entire movie,
and there were pretty much two that were the on the 95% of the
now,
time.
I like Ellen Page. I was actually impressed that she was 18 when she did this, because she really did look like she was like 14, 15.
Well, she still looks like she's 14, 15.
I would say 18 now.
I don't know.
And so for, if somehow...
With
if
makeup.
If somehow, and nobody knows who Ellen Page is, let me read a little bit of the movie she's done. Inception, Juno, X-Men, Days of Future Past, Hard Candy. Stuff like that. That's pretty much what she's really well known for.
But now the big focus to me is this one kind of, I would say this one is a little bit up the alley of kind of like Quentin Tarantino, where this movie is dialogue driven.
Well, it has to be. It takes place within like 14 square feet.
Yeah, but I got to say this one is a little bit different than kind of what Quentin does, because there was a lot of psychological game that was played between Patrick Wilson and Ellen Page. And I mean, I did some acting when I was in high school, and to do monologue back and forth with these two guys is not easy.
And that's amazing. It's not Tarantino-esque in the fact Tarantino has a lot of run-on sentences. Look at the opening to Reservoir Dog in the restaurant scene. I mean, that's kind of Tarantino's forte. I love it. Don't get me wrong.
Tarantino's forte is actually letting people talk like they would in real life. If you and I were just sitting there bullshitting on your front porch, that's how Tarantino writes. And most people can't do that. They sort of write a lofty version of how they want people to talk, sort of a la Kevin Smith or something. And I'm not downing it at all. I'm just saying it's a different style. This one, they almost had no choice but to let the dialogue run. And they couldn't, with the subject matter, really kind of show you everything that was going on, especially from the turn at the end.
Yeah.
So I want to start this off a little bit. This dude's a pussy. He couldn't beat up a little girl. Like, he had multiple instances to actually get free, and somehow she almost killed him, like, twice?
Well, she had a taser. But yeah, he could have had some more defensive action going on.
There was the scene where he had the gun.
Yeah.
There was the scene where
quite drugged with the gun.
There was the scene where she put the plastic bag over his head before that. He could have done something.
That was saran wrap. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah. I liked that.
It's
interesting for like a go-to move though, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she thought it out. I mean, this was all premeditated.
She was freaking handy with that saran wrap, dude. She got him up and just...
I love her...
spiderweb move.
I love her comment, though.
As it turns out, it was more premeditated than we all realized, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I love her reaction to that, her cussing out that, damn it, I killed him. Little did I know it was too soon.
You know, there was one line in this movie that just made me laugh my ass off. When she had him tied down to the table... She was icing his balls, getting ready, And she's still trying to have a conversation with him. She just comes out because he's starting to call her psycho and all this other crap. She goes, "Your conversational skills are seriously deteriorating as the day goes on." I thought that was the best line in the movie.
Like, yeah, she had some pretty good little smart assy. It was, man, I mean, it was creepy. The freaking
wait a minute, wait a minute. This is only creepy if you're a pedophile, Ryan.
No, but I mean creepy Ryan. The way she was enjoying playing it out.
Yeah. I gotta say, like, Ellen Page, like, I was very surprised by her acting in this one, because dude, this is a lot different than what we usually see. As John was saying, this is like Juno, you got X-Men, you have...
Well, different my ass. I mean, she's been killing it from day one, man. Yeah, I mean, and it's just about I watched a freaking movie about her in roller derby, and I was into it.
Oh, well, I would think if you just saw her more popular roles, which is Inception and X-Men Days of Future Past, a lot of real action-oriented movies, with not a real depth to character. This character had some depth in, like, the emotion and her emotional responses, and the way she comes off as crazy is still not an easy way to pull off, especially not as crazy as she turned out to be.
She had depth of character in Super.
Whip It. That's right. Whip It.
Oh, Whip It. Right. Yeah. Roller Derby movie.
Yeah, that one is actually pretty good, too.
That was kind of a shockingly good flick.
Oh, so here's the line that I actually liked, because it was kind of like, well, no shit. Harley Stark. I mean, you're the grown-up here. If a kid's experimenting and says something flirtatious, you ignore it.
Yeah.
You don't encourage it as a kid says, hey, let's make a screwdriver. You take alcohol away, and you don't race them to the next drink.
Yeah.
And that was probably, to me, my favorite line, because it was like, that's totally true.
Now, one of the things that kind of, I think, in this film is going to be one that kind of keeps it to a certain era is the chat room. Because the chat room is not around so much anymore.
Right.
Because, I mean, this movie took place, came out, I just had it, I lost it.
Yeah, but I mean, I know
2005.
You mean, it's even, translatable.
Even 2005, chat rooms were kind of dying out.
They were on the passé, like, but you still had the generation that came out of, like, Yahoo Messenger, AOL,
Well, that's MS... been, a lot of that's been taken up by Facebook Messenger, honestly. Yeah. But, I mean, if you're going to talk about the era of ICQ and Internet Relay Chat, that was passé in the late 90s, so that's...
Not necessarily. I mean, it had grown, and not to mention everybody at the time, it was part of the zeitgeist. So even if you... I mean, it was just so ubiquitous throughout everybody, you know, the culture, that you couldn't escape it even if you didn't have it. But it's translatable in the way that it's you know, like for us, you know, we didn't grow up with only having the radio. We had a friggin' television. But our parents had a frame of reference for when they only had a radio, you know, or something like that. So you can kind of infer based on the technology, like, oh, this is very similar to Facebook stalkers or Twitter stalkers or what have you. You know, fill in the blank.
Yeah,
oh,
another good line. Four out of five doctors agree that I'm actually insane.
Yeah, I like that one.
Actually a couple of people I was thinking, I know that description actually fits.
No, you got to be a little bit careful with that now.
Yes, because it could be a legitimate possibility of.
Well, even when she said it in the beginning, I was like, oh, wow, she kind of said that like she wasn't kidding.
Yeah, there's a couple times that, like, she says something early on in the film, and you're like, I don't think that was a joke.
Yeah.
And I would say one of the parts about this movie I thought was well written was how she was going through his stuff and started bringing stuff up. Like, well, if Denise was here right now, what would you say?
Yeah.
And just the pinpoints on what she would say was really well written to, you know, the psychological level of really screwing with him.
Yeah, I mean, it struck me at a certain point like okay, well, this chick's like almost too clever to believe. But then at a certain point, you realize how much planning went into the moment, the confrontation. And then again, at the turn towards the end of the movie, that this wasn't the first time that she had pulled this off, you know?
Yeah. Now, the thing for me, which I kind of enjoyed, was the fact that they didn't give you any backstory on her. I like the fact that he brings up at the point of, like, I know where you live. I know what school you go to. I know where your parents are. Because you believe that?
Right.
It's like, have you not realized that I have fed you a big-ass lie?
Yeah, well,
and I have fabricated everything.
It was partly the director. Now this is where I'm going to start kind of bagging on this movie a little bit. That was partly the director getting a little bit artsy for his britches.
Okay.
He had the low budget, really, because she's supposed to represent the idea. You know what I mean? Like she even says in the dialogue, you know, "I'm every girl you ever you saw or touched or heard."
So
you
know what I mean? she's like V for Vendetta, but less high ideal.
That's exactly what it is. And I mean, it's not a morality tale. It's to satiate our need for vigilante justice because we're beings. So it's mistaking itself in a couple of ways.
I can see what you're saying. I mean, because, I kind of thought that was a little, as you said, artsy or, you know, campy or, you know, little passe. But
I think he's trying to drive the point home.
Yeah.
You know? I think we get it. Pedophiles suck.
I think they had to apply something there, because the lack of a backstory, I think they had to fill something in, even though I like the fact there's no backstory.
Oh, man, but you can just let it go and just drop the microphone and walk away.
Yeah.
If a movie did that, I'd probably stand up and just...
Yeah, if they had cut that out, I would think I would have enjoyed it a little bit more. Yeah,
but you know, everybody has to have something. There always has to be a little more tangible... the substance for people to grab a hold on, besides the fact she's torturing a pedophile.
Well, I like the fact that when she got him to finally kill himself and jump off, that spoiler. You know, she kind of kept on telling. Well, duh, we spoil the damn movie every time. What are you talking about?
we would assume that somebody would. Well, if you're stumbling across this shit, sorry.
I'm not.
My art, you're bad.
So,
but it is really like a book club, for Christ's sake. I mean, we just sit there and like, this is the book we read last week. Moby Dick was fun. Herman Melville's a good writer.
By the way, Moby Dick, the most boring movie on a movie and book on the planet.
Oh, fuck you. That book is awesome, for one. American epic. And don't let anybody say any different.
I've read it. It's dull.
Good. I like the movie.
I actually want to see the new one.
Oh, that's what I thought you were talking about. You're talking about the Patrick Stewart one?
Yeah.
Oh, the Patrick Stewart one was a terrible adaptation.
And I love Patrick Stewart. But
I know, me too.
So, anyways, so when she gets him to kill himself and he jumps off and she was convincing him that she would go down and clean everything up, and as soon as he jumps off, she goes, or not.
Or not, yeah.
You know, I like that. I kind of thought that was a great little thing because, you know,
it was
like,
great when I saw him do something similar in Swordfish.
Why would you spend the time to go down and clean up his mess?
Yeah, that would have been my point, is like, totally, I got you covered, man, I got you covered. Jumps like, haste.
Yeah, that's kind of what she did, you know, but she had to kind of throw it in like, or not, so it's dying, you know,
right.
As
well, that
was,
rope
like,
was pretty long,
up.
Presumably he snapped his neck.
Yeah, I would hope not.
And that rope was pretty, the rope she kept using was pretty amazing. That didn't look like the rope, you know, you get down the block.
No, that's the one you get from the Killing Store.
Right. Yeah, it's climbing rope.
The same place the Boondock Saints got theirs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. Gotta have rope, man. Charlie Bronson had rope.
You and your fucking rope.
But he's always got rope, but he always ends up needing it.
Fuck.
Wilson, man, I freaking loved him in this movie. Patrick Wilson's my homeboy ever since Watchmen. As the Night Owl.
Yeah. I was like, that guy looks familiar. He can't be from Watchmen. And I'm like, holy shit, it is.
Yeah, yeah. He put on a little bit of weight with Watchmen.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, true his character.
Well, I was thinking it's the difference in characters is what, dude, this is true character acting, because this is 100% different character, and I couldn't tell until I actually looked it up.
Yeah.
That's amazing
he's
acting.
That guy from a few things, but he's like a notable guy from quite a few things.
Yeah, yeah,
he's
like
some side character at a bar.
Because he's done. Let's see, The Conjuring, Insidious, Hard Candy, Watchmen.
I like Insidious.
Well, he's in the new Fargo. Like
Fargo.
The Fargo TV series.
Oh, yeah. You know, I haven't watched that yet.
He doesn't look like
he's. I watched the first couple episodes at my folks' house, and it was freaking awesome. And I don't know why I didn't keep up with it.
Really?
The guy that plays Watson. Whose name I'm gonna totally Martin Freeman.
Oh,
it was also Bilbo in the Hobbit and all that stuff. He plays one of the characters in there with a total Minnesota was no Fargo, South Dakota.
That's Minnesota, I thought.
No, Fargo. is shit.
North Dakota?
I totally forgot where Fargo is.
Yeah.
But anyway, there, with that accent, that crazy Midwestern accent, and it's freaking awesome. He's really good in that show.
Hmm. Yeah, because I was wanting to see it, but, you know, it's like one of those that I'm like, how far can they really go with this? Because, I mean, Fargo the movie had its dead moments, you know?
Now, okay, it's an anthology. Now, yeah. a lot of things are starting
North
to do
Dakota.
This.
Well, to kind of get back on track on the movie.
We're on track.
It's already derailed. I'm trying to put it back on.
Oh, yeah, you can't put trains back on tracks.
You get a crane.
Cars get all buckled up, and then they'll just lay on their side. I mean, you got to get heavy machinery.
Yeah,
cranes. It takes a lot of effort. I would say this movie. In like 10 years, I say we'll definitely be dated. There's a lot about this movie that really dates it, in my opinion. The style of it, even the color palette, is kind of, in my opinion, will add to the date on this movie.
Well, it's the city color palette is what they've used in that. I've seen a lot of movies
I'll give it to you.
That are kind of like in LA or more of the urban areas like San Francisco, even some of the ones that you'll see in New York have that color palette, the more not so much like pastel, but like the
all grays and whites.
Yeah,
that Fallout 4 Institute look.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was thinking that the Watchmen guy, he definitely plays a very creepy character. He's really good at playing a nice, subtle character, then, you know, lo and behold, turns out to be creepy. Ellen Page plays an amazing psychopath on this movie. That being said, I didn't like this movie. it's really not my type of movie. I'll be completely honest. I saw it, my wife and I both kind of went, crap, this is a crappy movie. I actually would have given a 1 out of 5.
Wow.
But the dialogue
racist.
Was... What? Real, man. The dialogue was pretty
Check
good.
Your privilege, bro.
That coming from the whitest Mexican I've ever seen.
It's like bleach white right now. Look at that.
You see Chico? That being said, the cinematography for what there was in this movie was pretty good. And the dialogue was actually really good. It wasn't, you know, like a dialogue, because I was originally, once I read what this was, I was thinking, okay, the dialogue's going to be crap, because that's what I was expecting. Amazing dialogue, probably the best part of this movie. Well, it's pretty much the only part of this movie, but 2 out of 5.
Wow.
Okay. All right. I'll bet you anything the script of this movie was awesome.
I bet it was.
I'll bet it read great, which I mean, it did make anybody want to do it, just listen to seeing it on paper. There's technical issues sort of all around. Nothing really to do with the performances, because all the stuff that I would really change, I could have done in editing, you know what I mean? Like, so I'd blame the editor, just letting the director kind of dine out on these moments longer than he really needed to.
I think it'd be better if he made it a little bit more, not generic, but not have as much, like that one scene said they should have cut out.
The preteen.
Yeah, you can tell he was really trying to get his style across. I believe this was like his directorial debut.
And there was too much of a message.
And they kept the budget under $1 million just so they could not have any notes from the studio. So I applaud him for really doing exactly what they wanted to do, but that being said, not the most perfect movie.
Too much of a message.
I mean, you know, 3, just because... It's a stark concept of a movie, and I'm not gonna say it's like important or one of those moral movies, but it's one of those like oh yeah, you want to get creeped out for a little while and get really uncomfortable for 25 minutes? Yeah, check that movie out.
Pretty much.
Oh jeez, wow. You know,
so
I,
what did you give it?
Yeah, you said a 3.
3.
You know, I'm going to go a different route on you guys. I actually enjoyed it. I thought the dialogue was a lot of fun. I agree with Ryan. They could have cut out the preachiness. It would have made it for a little bit better of her just kind of being like, you know, you're dead. Peace out. I'm gone.
They could have sped it up. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, but I think I enjoyed it a lot. I think there's rewatchability for me at least. So I give it 4.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny.
This movie has no rewatchability for it.
Really,
I think it has a lot of cult rewatchability, though.
Yeah.
One of those that gets talked about in hush circles, you don't necessarily bring up at the water cooler.
Yeah. That I could see. This is definitely a cult feel to it. This will be the year, you know, that not quite a Eraserhead cult following, but I can totally see it being, hey, did you see that movie? So totally.
Yeah, in kind of hushed tones at work while you're telling your cool friend so the HR department doesn't find out.
I'll be all out. Hey, you see Hard Candy? Yeah, don't be a pedophile.
She pretends to cut the dude's balls off.
That was, by the way, I was actually really impressed with that scene. I love how she was saying, talk about, Hulch, this is very delicate. Yet she's
that movie made my blood pressure go up, man.
I had a lot of fun.
That's the reason, one of the reasons I gave it a 2 out of 5. It was just like, you know.
But see, I don't preclude a movie's, you know, like just because I had a bad feeling about it doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad film.
It just, for me, it wasn't my type of movie. It really wasn't. It was really well done, but for me, I just, you know, I have to give it a 2 out of 5. I'm going to get shit for it, but hey.
Whatever.
You know what I mean? The torture that you're feeling is stuff that you're projecting in your own mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
no,
as a dude watching that movie for the first time, you're just like, oh, wow. Okay, I'm going to put my pizza down for a second. Just give me a minute.
That'd be perfect eating, you know, spaghetti.
With meatballs.
But I don't know. Just for me, the whole feel of the movie really wasn't something that was not really my style.
That's not your thing.
So we're going to switch the TV series, which was...
Childhood's End.
This movie was interesting. It had kind TV of the show. Introduction to, like, Independence Day, and it went to almost a Gene Roddenberry-ish TV series.
Because it's like Independence Day, but then we come in peace?
Not quite.
No, they stick with the come in peace. But now, I wanted to ask you, John, because Ryan was a dipshit.
Ryan has a job.
Yeah, Ryan was a dipshit.
So do both. I do. What are you talking
about? Now, were you having a lot of fun with the way that they froze the planes and kind of had them stall and then just slowly come down?
There was some pretty neat stuff in this TV series.
Shoot him in the face.
One of my favorite part is, by the way, the guy from, what's it called? Hell on Wheels. He was also in Star Trek Next Generation, was in there.
You're talking about...
I can never remember his name, but he's an amazing actor.
The teleporter guy. What's his name?
Miles O'Brien.
Yeah, Miles O'Brien.
So this is like a combination of Earth Final Conflict / Independence Day. I've never seen Earth Final Conflict.
Yeah, I have.
Waiting
until you finished what you were talking about.
Just saying it. Like my favorite scene is this one kid gets shot in the heart. This beam from the mothership comes down, kills one guy, starts convulsing on the ground, and then shifts to the kid he shot, and all of a sudden the kid goes from, like, hardcore handicapped to pretty much, like, I'm singing in the rain.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know,
And his mother's crying. Ah!
I like the kind of, like, you got to the point that everything's going so well, so what's the hook?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I enjoyed about.
I love the ending. I love the ending where the hook was.
Yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah, I guess we're not gonna ruin it for Ryan.
I was gonna say, well, don't fucking ruin it for me since I gotta watch it.
But
think Legend.
Yeah, it was pretty good. So, but you know, I think we'll finish out the series. It's a 3-part series called Childhood's End, and they're about a little over an hour each episode.
You know what? You know what I will say. In regards to all of this is something I was kind of bringing up before we recorded this, but a lot of networks and organizations and the new stuff like Amazon and the places you never thought television shows would come from are definitely leaning towards the miniseries or even just an anthology type of thing like Fargo or something where it's 10 episodes, and then next season is a new cast, new situation, new story, sort of along the same vein, you know?
Yeah. I like that.
Detective thing.
Yeah.
Or just having 5 episodes where that's it. It's just this one-and-done thing where you can tell this story that doesn't need to be wrapped up in an hour and a half, but then doesn't need to go on for 7-8 seasons where the writers are just trying to really, you know, bleed out a living, which I can't necessarily say I begrudge, but... you know, shit, it makes for bad TV.
Yeah, it does. Now, we did one a while back called Neverland.
Yes. That was about the origins couple years of ago.
Peter Pan. Stay away from Pan and go see Neverland. And
much better. The graphics are about the same.
Yeah, avoid, like, the plague, this movie called Pan.
Except for John. John, go see it.
No.
Yeah, John, check this movie out. Cause
I don't think so. I don't like torturing myself. I'm not like him who sat down and...
Oh, I know about your taste in comedies. That's exactly what you like. But, dude...
No, Quentin Tarantino is a comedy.
But nobody...
Reservoir Dogs is a comedy.
I swear, pray you avoid this movie. It might be the worst thing that I've ever seen, regardless of the $128 million budget.
So John just doesn't like the Ramones.
So I have a... Jeez. I have a question for you, James.
let me just say this about Pan.
I actually do like the Ramones.
If Cobain didn't kill himself before, he would have shot himself in this movie.
So I have a question for you, James. Did the Guilty Sparks thing bug you?
A little bit.
That's the first thing time I saw that. I had flashbacks of playing Halo. Shoot the... Oh, wait, it's not talking.
So, we're going to hop on a movie news. I got a question.
Wait. We do have a Facebook page. Love us, hate us. Hey, as long as you're creative, we'll read your hate mail on air.
It's the Germans. They're coming.
And also, you can donate to Old Guy Tech TV to help keep the lights on.
So, I got a question for Ryan, just to see what he thinks. Now, which director do you think that Samuel Jackson, Christoph Waltz, Alexander Skarsgård, and John Hurt would come out to do a film for?
Scorsese?
I mean, I was going to say the joke, but then he ruined it with like a half-serious answer. I mean, Tarantino.
Yeah, that's what you think, but they're coming out for David Yates.
Really?
Okay, well, I mean, you know, shit. They're, at least they've all worked together, so even if the rest of it, I mean, you know, they're going to have a good dynamic. What movie?
They're rebooting Tarzan again.
Oh.
And what the hell role are they all going to be playing in?
Well, Samuel Jackson is the George Washington Williams character, which makes sense.
Wait. Is Casper Van Dien anywhere near this?
No. Phew. And then Christoph Waltz is Captain Rom, you know, the guy that goes around and shoots the animals type guy.
Right.
He's the hunter. And then you got Alexander Skarsgård as Tarzan, of course.
Really?
Yeah. That's
the role. Choice.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to see how tall he is. He's like 6-something. He's tall.
Yeah, he's wicked tall. He's too lanky.
No, is this going to be like the...
6'4".
Is this going to be like, was it Legend of Greystoke?
No, I liked that one. I really did like the Legend of Greystoke. Greystone, whatever. I can't.
Because that was a more serious take. I mean, that was a pretty heavy drama.
Yeah. So that's what it seems like the route they're going to go is more of like a heavy drama, kind of the origin type thing of what's going on. But I thought that was going to be an interesting one to see coming out. And then I'm willing to go see it. It's coming out this year. And then so Wu Ping Yang is coming back with a sequel to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yes, I've seen some stuff.
I'm kind of interested to see what they're going to do because that was when did they come out? Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was what?
It must have been 02, something like that.
Early 2000s.
Gosh, I'm trying to find it. It didn't come
Maybe
up.
Maybe 01.
But I kind of interested to see what they're going to do with this one because, you know, the best way to view Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is to take all the legends of Chinese history and say that they're real. And that's kind of the way. If you're watching it for realistic value, you're an idiot.
It's basically, it's a high-class kung fu movie.
Yeah, you guys remember, it was like sort of the Eastern introduction in a Western way.
2000.
2000. So it was really like the first kind of like big budget American produced, you know, movie that had that Eastern filmmaking style, as opposed to the stuff that we just tracked down at our local Asian run video store.
Or has the Wu-Tang Clan sticker.
But I mean,
on it.
The visuals for the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon coming out in 2000 was amazing. The colors.
Yeah.
The scenery, the fight sequences.
The only one that had the colors beat to me was The House of Flying Daggers.
That one was amazing. The film sucked.
That was a freaking hero, man. Yeah, that too. That was pretty.
Hero's still my favorite.
They were all kind of around the same time, more or less, within a few years of each other.
Still an amazing amount of use of arrows.
But yeah.
Oh, man, that was like my favorite part.
Yeah, but Hero is an amazing film. That was like one of my all-time favorites of Jet Li's. just amazing. Anyway, so yeah. But yeah, I'm interested to see what he's going to do with it this time, because, you know, one of my other favorite Yen Wu Ping ones is the original Drunken Master, not the Legend. Drunken Master. Don't get the confused.
They both have Jackie Chan in it is the problem.
Yeah, 1976. Although you're going to hear Jackie Chan say that he had a better time filming the recent one. No. Not a bad movie, just not the original.
I actually think The Legend, the remake, is actually an abortion of a movie. It's horrible.
I think it's horrible.
It's just because, you know, we had loved the crap out of the original for so long. I mean, it was like one of the coolest and most subtly funny.
Amazing.
And not even that subtle in certain points.
Well, that was Jackie Chan's early style that was amazing. His new style is just over the top.
But everybody who knows Jackie Chan now is like the Rush Hour Except guy or something like that. I've had to remind no, you have to go back and watch how incredible of an athlete this guy is.
Before they gave him strings and stuff, and he's like, what am I doing with this?
Right, yeah.
I'm going to tie my shoes?
Breaking every single bone in his body, just crushing it, you know?
Yeah,
so we
have some regretful news as well that we're going to throw out.
Yeah, we got a couple of ones that if you want to do it, or
you can go ahead.
We unfortunately lost one of my all-time favorite bad guys.
Yeah.
Die Hard, Harry Potter. Alan Rickman just recently died.
He was a great angel.
He always played a characters to me that you loved to hate.
But loved to love in certain times. I mean, as the voice of God from Dogma. What's his name? I can't think of his character's name, but from Galaxy Quest. It's like one of the funniest movies.
Yes.
And he's just freaking awesome in it. I mean, he's like the most lovable guy in the world. But then you can still watch him as Hans Gruber or Snape or something like that. And Snape, you don't know what the hell to think about him.
See, I love the character Snape because he's so ambiguous but evil at the same time. And it's an amazingly acted character. I actually think he's better acted than the character's actually written.
Yeah, and I'm actually
we're kind of mentioning all of his sort of goofy stuff and the stuff that we liked as you know, just Southern California Americans, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean the classical theater that this guy's done. I mean his acting credentials are freaking, you know.
Wait, he had chops. He was a stage actor. I mean,
for sure.
I mean this.
Yeah. And I'm actually looking forward to the last film that's going to have him in it, which is Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's playing the caterpillar. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
And another one is generally we don't do birthdays, but since it is this particular person, why not? And Betty White is 94.
Yeah, good that's freaking that's cause for celebration.
I mean, the fact you have an old Hollywood type actually make it to 94.
I haven't heard anything from her for a while, but the last time that she was, I heard something that she was talking and doing kind of interview stuff. She was still as wily as ever.
I actually recently heard that she's winding up her career. She's doing some TV show for TV Land, I heard, and she's starting to wind that down. And I guess she decided to retire at a lovely age of 94.
Oh man, I mean it's amazing. It's just that Obamacare still works. I mean, she could have spent the last 15 years just being, you know, like just a Hollywood darling, show up to parties and have everybody just adore you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, like Christy
Alley. Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, she hasn't had to work unless she absolutely completely wanted to in 20 years. You know, she could show up to absolutely anything she wants and everybody be like, "Holy shit, it's Betty White. Come on in, please sit down. What can I get you?"
Yeah.
Yeah. And so next week's movie is Ryan's pick. So you're up.
Oh, God damn it.
I know it.
Yeah, I figure that's why you said it like that, dick.
You follow after me.
Yeah, well, like, I remember that.
We've only been doing this show for 4 years.
Whatever, but I probably text you every time, right? You know, like, is it mine?
No, actually.
I have put absolutely zero thought into anything at all, and nothing immediately comes to mind.
Why don't you just do Kung Fury?
Short.
Oh, Kung Fury?
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, I'm not going to pick that, but seriously, if anybody has like 25 minutes to kill, do yourself a favor and watch that.
It's on
that.
Netflix now.
Yeah, it is on Netflix.
Which made me chuckle pretty good.
Just remarkable. Read the description. If you don't want to watch it after that,
Oh, yeah, it's totally worth watching. Well, you could always
Have to get back to you and then just have it posted on there by the time we...
I was going to say, we could always pick the movie that you were talking about why we loved it so much. Drunken Master.
Oh, shit.
Haven't we done Drunken Master?
I mean, I didn't think we did it. Anybody who watches this watch Drunken Master.
I don't think we did it.
If I'd be happy to talk about Drunken Master for 45 minutes.
Yeah,
I don't think we've done it, but if we did it, we'll do a flashback episode, since we all agree on it.
Yeah, I know we did a Jackie Chan.
We did Snake and Eagle Shadow.
Oh, I did one, too. And Drunken Master is usually my fallback, unless I did something like City
Hunter or something. We'll have to take a look. I guess worst comes to worst is what
we do. But it's okay. We can do it again. I'm good.
This is why stuff like Crouching Tiger comes out, is because you got to ease... sort of your non-initiated into kung fu movies, instead of just dropping stuff like, you know, like the Blind Shadow Swordsman on everybody and stuff like
Master the Flying Guillotine.
Dude, oh, right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, really, really esoteric stuff like
Zatoichi that. Zatoichi takes like, a little bit of getting into. Watching.
Dude, Zatoichi is awesome.
I don't disagree, but it takes a little bit to get used to, honestly.
It does, man. It does. And it's same thing
we could talk about these old Asian... These old Asian exploitations.
But yeah, okay, we're going to go with 1976 Drunken Master with Jackie Chan, because even people who know him from Rush Hour are going to get a kick out of watching him all shredded in this movie, acting like an ass.
So I don't remember if we did this movie or not. If we do, it's going to be a rare flashback and review. Ladies and gentlemen, I gave the movie a much-deserved 2 out of 5. James gave it a 4 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 3 out of 5.
He's... I have a twisted sense of humor.
Shocking.
No, I said have a twisted sense of humor.
Yeah,
guys.
this is James type of comedy.
Yes. I thought it was hilarious. I was laughing.
He makes Ryan and I look normal. And so, ladies and gentlemen, as always, thank you for watching.
Goodbye. ¶¶